I will bear with it. I will make it through for you, because that's why we're here. We suffer through horrible microphone conditions, all for you.
Yeah, you got it, folks. It's me again with a little attitude for all you out here in white bread land. All you nice people living in the middle of America, the beautiful. Let's see, we're on
96.3, caught myself, 101.1 FM.
Feels like a nice clean little band so far. No one else is using it, and the price is right.
John Kerry ain't my candidate. Both him and Bush are irrelevant. It's not the man, it's the system of control. Your vote is just the blinder. The last two centuries are your reminder. It's never given anything back to you. They give us a few choices on which we waste our voices, but it doesn't matter which one gets picked. The only change that the vote will bring is the rich white man that's profiting. It's been the same since 1776. Yeah, I'm old enough to vote yet, not dumb enough to fall for it. Won't sit back and watch history repeat. Two candidates, one outcome. Capitalist oppression. This year I am voting in the streets. Yeah, if we don't take action, we're in line for subjection. They're after me and they're after you. Our goal is a free planet. Theirs is a free market. We are the many, they are just the few.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop's Beer's Broadsides. This is Bathrop's Beer. Stay with us.
Come and see me anytime, cause you know that you are free to come and go anytime, and I'll always let you be. I don't need you, I just like your company. I don't expect you to be anything but you. There are no rules here on what you should do, because you are so good to me. And I like your point of view. I don't expect you to be anything but you. And I will be your friend till the end. And I will love you no matter what you do. And I don't need you to be around me every moment. Just come and go. Me to be anything but me. You always help me to feel so free, and you remind me of the good things and say, don't forget to smile. You never expect me to be anything but me. Go as you please, and we'll always.
So it's 10 to 10 on Saturday, July 3rd, 2004, down here at Pacific and Cooper Streets, more or less. We have a chess player and his portable, movable chess game, which has seats four. And then across the street, in front of Outfitters, Urban Outfitters, we got a kind of a crowd gathered around a couple of guitarists, one with an open guitar case, and we got a couple of, looks like a human chicken, and another kind of creature. What kind of a creature is that fellow in black?
I think he's a werewolf.
And a werewolf, yes. There you go. We got little kids watching. We got people in strollers watching, kind of surrounding the group. But are they contributing? Let's take a look at the tip dish and see how well this is going here. There's not a lot of money coming their way. It looks like a few coins. But they're definitely entertaining folks. So that's pretty cool. And look at the werewolf and the chicken are having a kind of a mock struggle here, while accompanied by two guitars. And again, all this is sort of a 10 feet shy of the line for the Cinema 9, which has a new movie, Spider-Man 2, and, well, a number of movies here.
Hang on.
We're talking with Phoenix, the fearsome harpist. Now, Phoenix, you're back in the Ville again. What are you doing? You're in front of the Bunny Shoes. How's Pickens?
Oh, pretty good. Doing good for Saturday night and a holiday weekend here.
What about the police here, your old fans, and the hosts?
They haven't bothered me since I've been back.
And how long have you been back?
A day.
Well, there you are. It's a good start. I mean, as Mayor Kennedy has said, there's really nothing to worry about. Joe Williams, you're with the Safe Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression. You've been doing some strumming, some picking, and some campaigning on the Peace and Freedom Party for the last couple months. What's happened downtown?
What's happening downtown? I don't know. Seems okay. Seems mellow. Bunch of street musicians. We got Cosmic Chris down there a ways playing right in front of a storefront, right in the doorway. And
Where's Officer Bechtel?
Seems to be everybody seems to be being left alone. So as far as it goes, it's okay this evening.
So you have to agree with the Mayor Kennedy's statements of a year ago that everything is pretty much okie dokie.
Varies night to night. Unfortunately, we have no consistency with this. We already had Sherry Connable sent an email to the Chief of Police Scary and also to the entire City Council complaining about the Veterans for Peace table being set up in front of the Del Mar for the Fahrenheit 9/11 showing and them being told by police officers that they would have to move in an hour, being subjected to the move along, of course.
Did they move?
No, they didn't, but the police never came back either, so they're just...
The war of nerves continues.
Yes, so. I mean, people have been given contradictory signals, and Sherry made a good point that it's supposed to be enforced by complaint only, so I don't know what's going on. There seems to be no consistency.
There is no consistency. It varies with the seasons, and as a street musician that's played here for 3 years, I've found that they're a little bit more lax in the summer, but at the beginning of the summer or the late spring, they have what I would call a sweep, which is when they really crack down on people. So you just kind of have to feel it out. There's definitely patterns to when they enforce and when they don't enforce the laws down here.
Now, Phoenix, you have your own CD. We played it on Free Radio. Have you been hassled for offering your CD for sale or for donation?
No, I haven't.
And have you actually done so openly, or do you still feel somewhat nervous about doing
that? I usually keep my CDs like underneath something, and I only pull them out when I'm asked. If somebody asks me, you know, if you have a CD, then I pull it out, but not. Yeah, and never mind.
That's good. Well, there should be no problem with that. After, you know, Mike True had won his case putting CDs for sale, and
provided you put them on the bare sidewalk and not in a, quote, display device.
Yes, all these, contradictory rules, but he filed a case against the city and won a monetary settlement out of it for harassment for having his CDs out for donation only. So take care, Phoenix. So, I mean, there should be no problem with having CDs displayed for sale, providing you don't have a price on them and they're for donation only. So I would hopefully the police have gotten that message and the hosts and everybody else, but who knows. At the SAFE event last Wednesday, there was...
SAFE event number 22.
Are you keeping track? Yeah, I haven't lost count. There's been so many. I mean, on the whole, it's been pretty good. I mean, as far as no harassment happening. Last Wednesday, Officer Brandt came by, and there was a couple signs set out on...
If you want the U.S. out of Iraq now, once for yes, twice for no.
And another sign, I'm not quite sure what they said, perhaps.
Both signs actually said the same thing.
They
were set up, admittedly, leaning against public property, which I think is considered a no-no.
Right, so Officer Brandt came along and, like, took the signs and...
I believe he asked you if they belonged to you, and your response was...
Well, no, they weren't mine, but he didn't ask anybody else. I assumed he wanted to know if they were my personal signs, and I said no, and then he walked away, but then walked around the other side of the cafe set aside and plucked them off and took them to the downtown host office and put them in.
So they were reclaimed by the valiant cop watcher, Jen.
Yes, she went and talked to Officer Brandt, and he went and got them out and gave them back and said the only problem was that you'd have to stand there and hold them physically. They could not be leaned up or just laying against the railing or on the sidewalk. They would have to be held personally by someone. But he did give them back. The only other thing that I found troubling about that Wednesday was Officer Baker, the old Butchie Baker.
Sergeant Butchie Baker?
Sergeant, I guess.
Back on the mall again?
He's back downtown, evidently. He was in a patrol car, and he circled at least three times taking video. They have those little video cameras mounted in the center of the inside roof of the police vehicle. And he drives by three separate times, and he's got his hand on it, and he just pans his little video camera right on the entire street scene there for SAFE. And he circled the block three times and videoing the entire time, every for three
times. Some good music. He plans to maybe sell it commercially, pirates on the internet.
Possibly. I don't know if he's going to get rich doing that, but I find that kind of surveillance troubling because, you know, there's no reason for it. There's no cause for it. It just seems to be part of his pattern of intimidation. And I don't know what he's going to do with the footage. You know, maybe he's showing it for training purposes. I don't know. But for me, I find it completely unnecessary. I do find it intimidating, and, you know, hopefully Chief of Police Scary can give some direction to his staff to, like, knock this stuff off. There's absolutely no cause for it, no reason for it, and if there's a crime being broken, if somebody needs to be confronted by police and talked to about a violation, then you park the car and get out and say something. Just don't be videoing us for no cause. Just, I find it pointless, a pointless waste of police time, as if there's not enough crime going on in town that would demand their attention. They have to, you know, waste it in this fashion.
Sergeant Baker, of course, was doing this 2.5 years ago when he arrested me and Zoe Einbinder for having a table in almost pretty much the same spot where SAFE now plays its music in front of New Leaf Market between the two green kiosks. And he did do a lot of videotaping the couple of days before he made his move. Actually, it was Matisse Selman, but apparently it was in consultation with Baker and other police officers, including the city attorney, to arrest political tablers. I was a political tabler at the time. I was tabling to stop the fencing off of the New Leaf Market area. So it could be something is coming up around that. But in the meantime, we can be rest assured that our federal representatives are taking all the action they can to deal with the international crisis by calling our boys and girls back from Iraq, right?
Absolutely not. FAR is absolutely refusing to make that kind of demand on a federal level. There was a town hall meeting that he called in Watsonville last week, and there was another one he did in Monterey, too, last week. And the Watsonville one that got reported in the Register Pajaronian quoted him as saying, he's not going to call for the immediate removal of the troops. He says we need to stay over there, and if we pulled out now, we'd leave chaos, and it would affect the reputation of our fine country, as if we're doing anything to improve our reputation or solidify our reputation. Seems to be going downhill fast. So he won't do it. Oddly enough, the Republican candidate in the race calls for immediate withdrawal. Myself, being the Peace and Freedom Party candidate, calls for immediate withdrawal. So in terms of anti-war candidates, FAR is not it. So if you're going to the polls in November, keep that in mind before you place a little X next to FAR's name.
Well, interestingly enough, the local, there's a full-page ad here from the Bill Motto Post of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, 5886. And there's a whole...
5088 is the local one. 5088, I believe, but anyway.
5888.
Yes.
5888. Sorry about that. Six. I'm a little bit confused. And this is a full page ad on today's Sentinel on page 3, it looks like. There's a 3.
Page 83, yes.
And it says, it talks about the cost of the war and our vision. And nowhere in here does it suggest that the troops should be removed from Iraq. They oppose the war starting. They don't like the war. They support... it's hard to read here on the light. Let's step over to the light here. It says, respect the sovereignty of all nations, respect the Geneva Conventions, commit ourselves to the general welfare, respect the sovereignty and the right to self-determination of the Iraqi people with all 130,000 U.S. troops occupying the country. And, of course, the government appointed and selected by Washington. And babbling about martial law now, so much for the elections coming up in January of 2005. But if you look this over, do you see anything about removing troops from Iraq? I don't see anything specific about that.
No, I see a lot of good reasons to remove the troops listed. Environmental destruction, civilian deaths, rise in terrorism, increased terrorist recruitment, human rights and prisoner abuse, etc., etc., but I haven't looked at the entire ad either, but I don't know why folks don't want to call the Democrats. Kerry wants to throw 40,000 more troops over there, so he's actually to the right of Bush and Rumsfeld on the issue. So,
well, the conventional wisdom which you hear from Democrats in line, for example, at Fahrenheit 9/11, which I heard at least one individual said this, it's everybody, but we can't leave them in this horrible situation. We created this mess, therefore we should leave our troops there to make it all better until the UN or some Arab nation coalition comes in to help out. What's your view on that, Mr. Peace and Freedom Party candidate?
No, it strikes me as a very racist statement, saying like, oh, our little brown Muslim brothers there in the desert lack the means to run their own affairs. Whatever you might think of Muslim people or Arabs in general, or the ability of those folks to run their own affairs, they deserve to have a shot at running their own affairs.
And, now wait a minute, the Kurds and the Sunnis and the Shiites would all be at each other's throats without the wise guardianship of the U.S. after all those many years of dictatorship with the evil Saddam, who was unfortunately given a few troops and a bit of intelligence by the U.S. at different points.
Well, I'm not convinced that it would devolve into civil war. I think they should be given a chance. If they ask for our help and want us there, then perhaps we can reconsider it down the road at some point. But
wait a minute, hasn't Prime Minister Alawi, in fact, requested that the U.S. troops remain?
Well, was he elected? Is he an elected official? No.
You can't have elections over there. It's too chaotic. The terrorists from Syria, the Osama bin Laden's troops, the individuals who are part of the Saddam Hussein diehards would never allow such a thing.
Well, you have to understand that Iraq had one of the highest level of education, literacy, healthcare, and et cetera, in the Middle East. And so these are people with engineering degrees and, a university. And,
but no experience in voting at any free elections. They couldn't make a free, informed choice like we in the United States can between the Democrats and the Republicans.
Oh, I don't see why not. Give them a chance. I don't see the only thing we're doing as far as the Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Shias, and everybody else over there as we're giving them, we're uniting them, but we're uniting them against us, which is not the greatest game plan in the world. It always
the terrorists to scare us away from Iraq. Is that what you're saying, a candidate Joe Williams?
I don't know about scaring us. I think they're, you know, just like in Vietnam, they're going to wind up kicking our fucking ass, and that's exactly what we're seeing happen. What we need to do is in Howard Zinn's estimation, we need to be a humanitarian superpower. Instead of shipping over more bombs and bullets and landmines and depleted uranium nonsense, we need to be, you know, fixing the ministries we destroyed, the telephone exchange, the electricity, the water treatment. Of course, we bombed all those, you know, back to the Stone Age, but of course we left the oil ministry and the security ministry untouched.
We might also add that many of the key positions in the selected government, which took a power June 28th, 2 days before, in a midnight power exchange, were in fact not only were selected by the U.S. and by Bremer, but will remain in power for the next 5 years in spite of the elections, particularly the Ministry of the Interior and I believe another ministry, the Security Ministry. I could have the exact names of those wrong.
Well, we need anti-war candidates across the board. Anybody out there who's got any, you know, initiatory energy towards running for office, you should do it, because we've got basically, as Ralph Nader has put it, the, you know, two-party state masquerading as a one, you know, a one-party state masquerading as a two-party state. And it's just pathetic. You know, the Democrats are not anti-war. They truly aren't. They vote for, you know, huge bloated military budgets constantly, year after year after year. The Republicans aren't doing this on their own. They do it with bipartisan support. Kerry asking for these extra troops, and it has no quibble with it whatsoever.
I talked to activist Steve Argue, who also has been a member of your Peace and Freedom Party Central Committee until very recently. And he's recently quit the Central Committee and a steering committee, I guess it is, or whatever, and as County Council, the governing body, because of his concern that the national candidate, Leonard Peltier, does not support, Peltier does not support the withdrawal of troops. And from Iraq, what's your, I mean, not that your position and his position have to be identical, but argues that he could not in conscience support the national ticket, although he supports Peltier's release, and he supports a lot of the things Peltier stands for, but he couldn't be a part of that, and he was getting a lot of shit from a few people on the state committee level for essentially pressing that position.
Well, as far as it goes, he's entitled to his opinion, and he not only resigned from the local county council, but he resigned from the state central committee and from the Peace and Freedom Party in general, which is fine. He's entitled to his opinion on that. The debate that went around back and forth was that Peltier's running mate that he nominated is his lawyer, Barry Baldarach, probably butchering the pronunciation, is going to be his vice presidential nominee. On the ticket, which has not officially happened yet. That's going to happen at the state convention at the end of July, I believe. And Nader has actually asked the Peace and Freedom Party to endorse him so he can get
your reaction to that?
I don't think it's a good idea. I like Peltier a lot better because I think it will raise the political prisoner issue. I think Nader is kind of just grasping at straws. He's got he got on the ballot in a few states by kind of kissing up to the Reform Party. This is the Ross Perot, Pat Buchanan party. So he doesn't really have any, he's not a socialist. The Peace and Freedom Party is a declared socialist party. I think Nader wants to put a shiny, happy face on capitalism, which I don't think can be done. But, you know, back to Steve.
From the best anti-war position of all the candidates that got significant amounts of votes in the last election.
True. I'll give him that, but his position is similar to Kucinich's, and I think it's the one that Steve Argue takes issue with, in that he wants the U.S. troops out, in essence, but he wants to turn it over to the United Nations. You know, that's not, I mean,
regarded as a U.S.-dominated body, in spite of criticism from the Bush administration.
Well, exactly, and the Iraqis aren't going to put up with that. You remember a few months ago, the United Nations building was bombed. You know, it's not an acceptable alternative. And as far as what Peltier's position on that, his legal counsel said that Steve was misrepresenting Leonard's position. So I'll just leave it at that and, you know, let Leonard and his lawyer, Baldarach, I'm not quite sure.
Balderdash.
Well, perhaps, according to Steve. But, you know, let them defend their own
position on that, and I'm sure it'll be an issue at the state convention. But I mean, Steve had credentials as a party member in good standing to go to the convention and challenge the nomination. Peltier's nomination and status on the ballot is not assured at this point, especially now that Nader and Kamejo have petitioned the party to allow them in. That could happen. It could be Nader Peltier. It could be a variety of things. But Steve took the approach of withdrawing, calling the Peace and Freedom Party a reformist organization, and started a new revolutionary party, he calls it, and posted a draft platform on IndyMedia. So he's calling it what it is. It's a left split from the Peace and Freedom Party. So he's entitled, you know, more power to him, and I wish him luck.
Well, what is you're a local candidate? How are you? Steve has in the past criticized you for not sort of being sufficiently militant in challenging FAR in public venues for his essentially pro-war position or pro-occupation position. Have you confronted FAR on this? How have you confronted him, and how will you confront him in the future? Since it sounds like you do disagree with him on this issue and think it's an important issue.
Oh, of course. Well, there's a few town hall meetings coming up, and to the extent that I'm able to attend these, I will have materials available and will definitely point out FAR's record in relation to what I would do. I mean, it's not just that issue. There's a lot of issues I have in disagreement with him on. He's a big NAFTA, GATT, WTO man, and all this free trade globalization stuff has been a disaster for everybody here in this country and even outside the country. So, I mean, that's just one issue. He voted to keep the disparity in sentencing between powdered cocaine and crack cocaine, thereby, you know, basically, you know, dooming a whole generation of basically it's a poor man's drug, crack mostly, and, you know, left white folks alone. So that's a racist vote, in my opinion. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. So to the extent that I'm able, I mean, to confront him, then I will. If he's got
ideas. Done so far? I mean, have you showed up at any of his town hall meetings and what the fuck are you doing?
No, there's only been two so far, and I was unable to attend either of those. But there's one coming up in Santa Cruz that I'm going to be at. There's a bunch down in San Benito County that I'm going to hopefully try to get to. We'll see where it goes. Well, what has happened is there was a interestingly enough, the Watsonville town hall, Mark Risley, who's the Republican candidate for Congress, also opponent. I'm running against him as well. Not the Watsonville town hall, excuse me, there was a meeting in Salinas. Parents of reservists who had their tour of duty extended called this meeting with FAR. It was open to the public. Mark Risley went down there, and basically the sentiment in the crowd was a bring the troops home now sentiment, and like I've stated, FAR doesn't support that position, does not call for that.
The whole thing recorded? I mean, was it?
Not that I'm aware of, but it was reported in the paper. But there was no mention of Risley, who got up and called FAR on it. He confronted FAR publicly.
You know this.
Because I talked to somebody. Well, no, I didn't talk to Risley. I talked to somebody who was at the meeting.
Could there be a potential Peace and Freedom Risley coalition here in the offing?
Well, in terms of confronting FAR on issues that we're all in agreement with, I don't see why not. Risley, believe it or not, is a fairly progressive Republican. He's pro-environment, pro-affordable.
That was Joe Williams. Actually, I think this interview is going to be continuing in a moment. We'll see if that actually happens. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, but still pertinent, the issues are still hot.
That's about 4:10 on June 26th.
No, I think that's another interview coming at us. So let's pause briefly with a little of this.
By yourself. Well, you gotta go down. Work in a factory is what kill a dog. Working on the belt line killed your soul. Working in the limestone and cement quarries withered your lungs. Working in the cotton mills shot your legs and feet all to hell. And working in the steel mills burned up your spirit like a gnat that lit in the melting pot. But out of this whole mixing bowl of hell and high water, the working folk have marched against billy clubs, against machine guns, and they sang their way through the whole dirty mess. Now the bank men have got their union, and the landlords got their union, and the finance men got their union, but down south and out west on the cotton farms and working in the orchards and the fruit crops, it's a jailhouse offense for a few common everyday workers to form them a union and get together for higher wages, honest pay, and fair treatment. Woody Guthrie, 1941.
Well, you gotta go down,
and join the union.
A raise in pay, all you have to do is go and ask the boss for it, and he will give it to you. He will give it to you, my boys, he will give it to you. A raise in pay without delay, he will give it to you. Oh, put it on the ground, spread.
They own no bonds or stocks.
They own no yachts and limousines or tins the size of rocks.
They own no big estates with pools or silken DVDs.
Because they pay the working man such fancy salaries. Oh,
oh,
oh.
Was a union mate who never was afraid of goons and ginks and the company finks and the deputy sheriff who made the raid. Went to the union hall when a meeting it was called, and when the company boys came round, she always stood her ground. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, till the day I die. This union maid was wise to the tricks of the company spies.
She couldn't be fooled by the company soon. She'd always organize the guys.
She'd always get her way when she struck for better pay. She'd show her cards in the company guard, and this is what she'd say.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union.
I'm sticking to the union.
I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, till the day I die.
And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary. I think that's their latest retrospective, In These Times, part of the Union Medley. Before that, it was Valerie Christie from her yet, I guess, unpublished album of personally composed and sung songs. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org in Santa Cruz. We are unlicensed, unrehearsed, and often unprepared, but we are here, and hopefully we're not unheard. If you want to call in, the phone number is 831-427-3772. That's 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz for short. Phone line is open. You can also join the chat room at www.pagesincolor.com and then click on chat and sign in, and you can babble along with some other folks who are listening to the show, mostly die-hard loyalists, but still, your presence will be welcome. Again, the phone number, 427-3772, www.pagesincolor.com. You can also email me personally at rnorris3@hotmail.com if you're perhaps feeling a little self-conscious or you've got stuff that's confidential you want to raise behind the scenes, so to speak. So there's also a table you can listen to this radio show from on Thursday evenings. That's tonight, of course, between 6 and 8. There'll be a what's called HUFF table, H-U-F-F, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That table is downtown on Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz, right outside Borders Bookstore, near the Forbidden Change Zone. That's the zone where if you dare to sit down on the sidewalk or if you dare to have a sign that silently and respectfully asks for, oh, I don't know, food or spare change at any time, that is illegal and you can be arrested, get a $162 ticket the first time and up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine on the second such offense. It's one of those forbidden zones that largely now take up the Santa Cruz downtown area, at the compliments of the Santa Cruz City Council, the Redevelopment Agency, the current City Council majority, actually the unanimous City Council, the local downtown association, specifically businesses like Jackson's Shoes and Pacific Trading Company, were very instrumental in pressing for these kinds of laws, endlessly complaining to the police about the presence of street musicians near their shops. They just couldn't stand them. And I understand there's recently been an upsurge of concern. An upset and angry street performer said he was harassed by personnel from the Pacific Trading Company yesterday. He also mentioned that it was yesterday and the day before he said he was assaulted by Trollbusters on Tuesday evening. Hopefully we'll be able to hear from him later, at least a taped interview. So what's been happening with you? Have you been attacked physically on the street by Nazi-esque thugs who don't like homeless people or hippies? Have you experience some problems with the police? Or if is the opposite happening? Are you finding a mellower, more friendly scene downtown in Santa Cruz? I often raise the red flag of alarm when I hear it or see it happening. I raise the flag when I hear concerns. But I want to be fair and balanced. Hey, fair and balanced. Actually, at least truthful to give an honest impression of what's going on. So you've got to help me out there. If you're watching, if you're listening, if you're around, what do you say? What do you see? What do you hear? Let's, if you can, give a call to 427-3772. A story caught my attention in the Chronicle, and it was actually a very short story. It was a, two-sentence, a little longer than that, but a very brief story on page A3 of today's San Francisco Corporate Chronicle. And it said, officer on trial over failure to arrest man. New York, the police department put an officer on trial Wednesday for refusing to arrest a homeless man who was sleeping in a parking garage. Edward De La Cruz, 39, could be kicked off the force if an administrative judge finds him guilty of failing to obey a lawful order. The incident occurred in November 2002. At that time, I think he was declared man of the year or certainly given very favorable treatment by homeless newspapers throughout the country. And, yes, there are homeless newspapers. The one in Santa Cruz is actually out of San Francisco, Street Spirit. You may have seen it downtown, sold by homeless people. It's a way of making a little money, maintaining a little bit of self-respect in a difficult time. Also, Street Sheet is another homeless paper. Anyway, on the net at the in a Pittsburgh paper from Pennsylvania, I found a longer story on the same subject by columnist Tony Norman. New York Police Department suspends compassion in dealing with homeless. And actually, that's an older story. It doesn't really go much further, but gives you a little of the background. Recently, and this is December 3rd, 2002, a New York police officer discovered that blind obedience wasn't his fort, or forte as commonly called. In a tug of war between personal integrity and orders from a supervisor, Officer Eduardo De La Cruz, 37, chose the road less traveled. He listened to his conscience. For his trouble, Officer De La Cruz was suspended for a month without pay. He also faces a department trial, apparently 2 years later, for insubordination for defying a direct order from his sergeant. The only unforgivable sin as far as the NYPD chain of command is concerned is saying no to someone who outranks you. In recent years, New York cops accused of unconscionable acts of brutality have been assigned to desk jobs while their cases were investigated. It's interesting that Dela Cruz's reluctance to enforce a legally dubious social policy resulted in sanctions far more severe than those accused of truly notorious crimes. But the police brass must have suspected that Dela Cruz was going to go off the reservation, given his over-the-top compassion for the homeless. The eight-year veteran's troubles began in earnest November 22nd when he and his partner responded to a radio call about two homeless men sleeping in a heap of garbage bags at One Irving Plaza in Midtown. Their sergeant happened to tag along for that shift. As members of the NYPD's new 48-member homeless outreach unit, that means perhaps homeless get-out unit, I don't know, Dela Cruz and his partner were expected to adhere to the department's rigid new protocol for dealing with the city's rapidly growing ranks of homeless people. Faced with a public relations nightmare that evokes memories of New York before his predecessor put things in order, quote-unquote, Mayor Michael Bloomberg has the Herculean task of making an estimated 37,391 people disappear from the streets every night. Once prompted by the officers of the homeless outreach unit, vagrants and other social undesirables are expected to go quietly to overcrowded shelters that may or may not turn them away. In 1987, when the city had 28,737 homeless people to house every night, there simply weren't enough shelters in the five boroughs to accommodate them all. 15 years later, the available shelter space hasn't kept pace with the benchmark that was already woefully inadequate. At this point, juggling bodies and a daily minuet of human misery seems to be the city's plan for dealing with the complex and varied needs of the homeless. Those who refuse to go through the motions of what is just as often an exercise in futility are arrested and shepherded through a criminal justice system that never seems to run out of beds. Officer Dela Cruz had the temerity to ask, why? A definite no-no in the clannish world of the New York City law enforcement, where blind obedience and the submersion of individuality is the ideal. Dela Cruz struggled to understand the logic of a social policy that depends on cops to shift homeless bodies around like chess pieces on a board already too small for a fair and equitable game. In the end, Dela Cruz opted out of following orders. It didn't make sense to him. He told his colleagues he wasn't going to arrest homeless folks. Instead, he provided them with bags of clothes and coffee. Such a fundamental subversion of the department's stated mission didn't go over well with the supervisors, who couldn't care less about the golden rule. When Dela Cruz, his partner, and their sergeant came upon 44-year-old Stephen Neal and another homeless man sleeping in a parking garage at One Irving Plaza, it was the proverbial moment of truth. When the vagrants refused to go to a homeless shelter, Dela Cruz's partner slapped the cuffs on one of them. Despite a direct order from his sergeant, Dela Cruz refused to arrest Neal. A good cop's journey into limbo began at that moment. Now, halfway through his suspension, and that was, of course, in December 2002, apparently it was only about one step into his suspension, since we're already in July of 2004, almost August, Dela Cruz is no longer speaking to the press. His boss has ordered him to respect a media blackout they imposed. It's not in his interest or the NYPD's to harp on the fact that a cop put his job on the line by refusing to follow what he considered an unjust order. There are many who consider it a dangerous thing when a cop confronted by an ethical quandary dares to think for himself. But wouldn't it be the first time heroism was confused with something far less noble. That's Tony Norman, and he's writing in a Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania paper, which looks to be the Post-Gazette. What do you think? Give a call, 427-3772. Ever had police officers do that locally? I heard it occasionally happens, I suppose. And the opposite as well. Of course, the main problem are the laws that the police routinely enforce, particularly when the merchants and the residents want them to, even though there's no real health or safety problem. Just a question of class war with the cops on one side.
We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water, we shall not be moved.
We're black and white together.
We shall not be moved.
Yes, our union is forever.
We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water, we shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by.
15-8 on the 28th of July, 2004. So it's safe event number 26, and kind of overcast evening, but a relatively large crowd of singers, half of them nude. They came and went. There's some of them are still here: Susan, Michael, of course the Valeries, myself, Gregory. Here's a couple. What's your name?
Miriam.
And you are?
Mustafa.
And what do you two think of all this singing here?
We love it.
We just enjoy it, yeah.
Where are you guys from?
Paraguay and Turkey.
And Turkey. I'm going to have to arrest the Turkish person and confiscate the Paraguayan woman.
Absolutely, yeah.
So how long have you two been around? Are you old-timers here?
No, 2 years. I've been here 2 years.
What do you do?
I study at UC Berkeley.
And you are?
I'm just living here.
Paraguayan person.
A Paraguayan person, yeah.
Paraguayan in town.
You are certainly right. No, there are more. I have them with me.
You're not an old Nazi war criminal by any chance.
Are you kidding me?
Well, of course.
Well, you never know.
You never can tell. You have that Germanic look about you. You never can tell. So, you guys live downtown? No, you live probably up on campus.
No, I live up in Berkeley.
Silicon Valley.
Oh, so this, you're just completely from out of town. Well, welcome to Santa Cruz.
Thank you. We always come. Yeah. We love Santa Cruz.
We feel part of Santa Cruz, so
yeah.
We always come here. I mean, we don't live here, but yeah, we love it.
We're talking with Phoenix, who's had a hard day. Phoenix, you're a harpist on
the
street.
No, I don't want to talk on the tape.
Too hard a day to talk, even. All right, well, we'll talk to you another time. You could perhaps, I'd ask you to sing a harp note, but you probably couldn't do it. Who can imitate a harp?
Three days I've had the flu, too. So.
Well, that's why you kissed me.
Really sick. I'm not going to give you anything, though. It's
you've been performing in spite of the fact that you've been ill.
Yeah, I got to pay my rent somehow.
And how many hours did you perform down here?
I don't know, a few. I didn't keep track.
Cops are okay with you these days?
They haven't bothered me since I came back in January. They haven't bothered me.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you. And harp on.
Rock on.
So here we have a satisfied soup taster. Your name,
Is Shreya. It's vegan?
It's not vegan, it is vegetarian.
Yeah, sour cream.
There, but this other, there's no dead animal parts.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was coconut or sour cream.
What do you think of this tasty soup?
It's so great. I'm so glad you guys are doing this. It's a good service to the community.
Well, fine. What are you up to?
I'm hanging out with my friends.
Any hassles downtown from police or other infamous, questionable people?
I usually have pretty good luck with the cops. I think I look pretty inconspicuous.
Yes. Again, we've been talking with
Shreya.
Thanks, Shreya. And in fact, there's no sign of the police around here. Chris, you've been walking up and down the street, passing out the,
street performer poll to different street performers and kind of getting them to give some opinion of the value of this group that's been playing every week here for the last 26 Wednesday nights, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. You seen any cops?
No, I saw some a couple hours earlier. A cop was parked in front of Boris with his lights on. I saw him walk over to Dakota, and that's about it. And earlier, when I got here at 6, there was just walking by, but other than that, I haven't seen any.
There was a report that Officer Pam Bechtel harassed Looney Tunes Mark, the guy who does balloons in front of the Pacific Trading Company. And indeed, he came by a few minutes ago very upset, saying that apparently he'd been jumped or something as well last night, and also was getting some kind of hassle at the Pacific Trading Company, intended to go back there every day. We'll see what's happening with that. Any other reports?
No, just Bechtel telling Mike to put his blanket away, and no hassles tonight at all other than that.
That's Musical Mike, our guitarist, who had laid out a blanket as a legal display device.
Yeah.
It's actually legal to have a display device, so Bechtel was wrong again, as usual.
Wrong again.
But nonetheless, able to exert her power.
Any what?
Power tripping.
No, I haven't seen any.
Well, there you are. Your name, sir?
Robert Bruce Hedenberg.
Robert, you yourself were, shall we say, unfortunate enough to be accosted by a police officer?
Two of them in the back parking lot at the 24-hour fitness where I'm a member.
What happened?
I logged in at 11, and I went in and I worked out, and I came out of the club, and I laid down in my car, listened to my stereo, and the cops rolled up and gave me a sleeping ticket.
You know, it is legal to sleep on a business property with the permission of the owner.
I pay like $50. I pay like $50 a month, plus I put a good like $500 down payment, and I'm a member. And there, I showed them my membership card. They didn't care. They're hassling. They're just hassling people.
Who were the cops? You know their name?
You know, it was a woman and a guy that looked like Freddie Prinze. He had a mustache, short dark hair, and he didn't like it much when I told him that his mustache looked like shit and he should shave it.
I see. And this was about 11 o'clock at night?
No, it was 1 o'clock.
And did he give you a place to go? Did he say you can go somewhere else legally to park and sleep?
Yeah, he did tell me to move, so I moved three parking spots down from where I was on the 24-hour fitness property where I am a member, and just turned off my engine and stayed right there.
Now, did he say that did he give you a legal place to go?
No.
Did he say that he'd received a complaint?
No.
Did you advise him, you might not have known this, that it is legal to park your vehicle in a business parking lot with the written permission of the owner, up to two vehicles per parking lot?
No, I didn't know that. I'm a member there.
Right. If you want to go to court and fight it, my first suggestion is you disqualify the referee.
Yes.
What that means is you go sometime in the next few days to the basement of the county building and you sign a, you give them a letter that says, I believe referee Basket, that's her name, the referee is prejudiced and I want a judge to hear my case. And you cite 170.6 CCP, which I'll give you if you're interested.
I am.
And then you go to court, you plead not guilty.
Yes.
Then you call HUF, 423 HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
I will.
And come to a HUF meeting and we'll try to advise you as to how to fight the ticket. What you really do to beat the ticket is you go to Total Fitness, you get them to write you a note that says you're a member.
It's 24-hour fitness.
24-hour fitness. You say, I have a right to,
yeah.
To say that we recognize this man is a member. We gave him permission on that night to sleep in his vehicle in that place, and that is sufficient under the law for you to beat the ticket.
Yeah, I'll do that. I will do that.
But always remember to respect the law and the police wherever you go, because remember, it's all for your own good.
You know, respect. You know, I try and show courtesy, consideration, and respect, but they're so darn mean. They're so mean and they're so nasty.
You've got to bend over and spread wider. That's the idea.
I'm telling you, it's like they're Gestapo. They're Nazi Gestapo picking on. I mean, there's crimes going on in the city that they could be taken care of, but maybe it's slow one night, so they're going to go, like, pull onto the 24-hour fitness parking lot and make sure that somebody's not doing something they're not supposed to be doing. It's they're crazy.
And also in the future, if you can, get the names and badge numbers of the police officers who are doing this so we know if there's a pattern.
All right.
We've been talking with
Robert Bruce Hedenberg.
Thanks, Robert. So you say you've actually had this experience before where you had a ticket and you disqualified Mulligan when he was the referee?
You know, it happened 1 year prior, almost to the day. And, a year ago, they did the exact same thing to me, and I went to court, and I won. And a whole year went by, and then they saw me back there, and they pull in and do it again.
They're just trying to give you a yearly salute, I think. That's the idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're
And you're tuned to Free Radio at 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. The phone number, again, should you choose to want to join us on the air, is 427-3772. I'm Robert Norris. We'll be going on for another hour here. Again, the case of Eduardo de la Cruz, which I read a two-year-old story from a few moments ago, New York police officer who was disciplined for refusing to arrest a homeless person in New York City for simply being homeless in a public space, was the subject of a more recent article by David Gonzalez in the New York Times. The headline is, "Cops Suspended for Refusing to Hassle Homeless June 24, 2004. As someone who believes Jesus Christ can be seen in the grimy faces, even in the grimy faces of those living in the city's shadows and crawl spaces, police officer Eduardo de la Cruz says he obeyed a higher authority when he refused to arrest a homeless man in November 2002. On the beat, however, the police commissioner trumps the almighty, as Officer de la Cruz learned when he was suspended for his action. Charged with refusing to comply with a lawful order, he faces a departmental trial in late July, which apparently began a day or two ago, that could cost him his job and pension. Speaking publicly for the first time, Officer de la Cruz described himself as a religious man with an unblemished record whose attempts to temper his job with compassion collided with the department's zero-tolerance policy on homeless people. His lawyers argued that the department's homeless policy gave officers far less flexibility in negotiating with him, resulting in arrests for the most minor of infractions. I did not want to compromise my position, he said. Now I was facing something that was hard to do from the beginning, which was locking up the homeless without giving them a fair chance. Officer de la Cruz, 39, has already served a 30-day suspension without pay and has been transferred out of the homeless outreach unit. His wife and five children are uneasy about the future. What sustains him, he says, is his faith. What did St. Paul say? Fight the good fight of faith, he said. I'm fighting for peace to get back my life. I still have to deal with the possibility of being fired, all for doing something I believed was right. For the police department, an order is an order, and officers are not given leeway to choose which ones they follow. The police department is a quasi-military organization where disobeying a superior's lawful order is a serious offense, said Paul J. Brown, the deputy commissioner for public information. The penalty will be decided after trial, not before. He declined to comment further on the case. A spike in arrests of homeless people in the fall of 2002 led advocates and civil libertarians to sue the Bloomberg administration in New York City, contending that the police were singling out the homeless. Over one month that ended in mid-November of that year, the police arrested 580 homeless people, compared with 288 over the same period the previous year, on charges from sleeping in public to assault. The city settled the lawsuit by instructing the police not to focus on homeless people when enforcing violations. Advocates for the homeless are stunned that the department would seek any further punishment of Officer de la Cruz beyond the suspension. They're going to trial on that, asked Doug Lasden, the executive director of the Urban Justice Center and advocacy group for the poor. They're going to make this guy a hero. Officer de la Cruz said he grew up admiring the police as strong figures who helped the public. He spent a few years after high school working as a lifeguard and swimming instructor before the demands of marriage and family led him to become a police officer in 1994. After 3 years of late-night shifts patrolling the subway, he transferred to the homeless outreach unit, which he saw as a way to help the most vulnerable. What he found amazed him as he ventured into tunnels to find people living with jury-rigged sources of water and light. It was shocking. The ingenuity, he said. They would find a way to live in a hole. I mean, a cave, that's different. This was in a cave, that's different. This was wild. He befriended some of the regulars, often giving them food or clothing. A lot of things, he said, he did quietly and alone. I didn't see them as homeless, he said. I saw them as people. I'd say a majority of New York City is just a paycheck away from being homeless. Everything changed in October 2002, he said, when his unit was told one day at roll call that it was to become, quote, proactive after complaints to police and politicians about the growing presence of homeless people on Manhattan streets. He said his unit was told to ask homeless people if they wanted to go to a shelter. Anyone who refused and lacked proper identification would be arrested. Zero tolerance. We will not make deals with the homeless, Officer De La Cruz said his superiors told him. This is not Monty Hall. Oh, my Lord. I mean, we were all mind-boggled. Officer De La Cruz said tensions with his superiors first arose when they noticed he was not making arrests of the homeless. So his superiors found locations where there were homeless people and called him in. His lawyer said that one night he was summoned to Grand Central Terminal, where his superior showed him two men asleep. One man had dozed off waiting for his wife, but had identification and was issued a summons. The other told Officer De La Cruz he wanted to go to a shelter. The following night, November 22nd, Officer De La Cruz was called to a garage near Union Square where a man was sleeping under a no trespassing sign. According to his lawyers, one of Officer De La Cruz's superiors asked the man if he wanted shelter. When the man said no, the superior arrested him and then told the officer to process the arrest. Officer De La Cruz, according to court papers, instead asked the man if he wanted to go to a shelter rather than jail. I am not going to arrest him, he said. He's got a right to a shelter. Another officer processed the arrest, and Officer De La Cruz was suspended. I'm going to pause here and make a few comments. First of all, this is interesting. It shows that New York City is kind of nervous about the Pottinger decision in Florida or some similar decision that they fear might be coming out of New York. The Pottinger decision in Florida, in essence, said that you cannot arrest a homeless person for what's called a life-sustaining misdemeanor or crime, such as camping, sleeping, being naked, showering, public nudity when you're doing that, urinating in public. Unless you have a shelter, you can take that person too. That is to say, if they're doing something that they need to do because other facilities are not available, you cannot criminalize them for that. This is a decision that was agreed to. It was actually imposed in Florida in the early 90s, and then it was resolved in a consent agreement in 1998 with a huge financial settlement. Much of which went to the lawyers, but some of which went to the homeless, for people, homeless people in Miami, Florida. Similar agreement was arranged in Atlanta, Georgia. And I've been seeking in Santa Cruz to get Santa Cruz authorities to agree to some changes in the laws that reflect this relatively basic notion, this basic common sense human right awareness that you cannot criminalize someone for sleeping if you give them no options, other than the option to get the fuck out of town. Because that, of course, is what every other jurisdiction can then choose to do, and then people have no options whatsoever, and particularly criminal in Santa Cruz, and particularly against the spirit of what a lot of people feel the city is really all about or should be all about. So that's the first thing. The New York City authorities seem to be saying, well, we have to offer them a shelter space first. But after we offer them a shelter space, if they've still refused to come, then we can arrest them. Even though you would think as a homeless, as an adult, even if you're homeless, you have a right to use a public space. Now, in this situation, here was a guy sleeping under a no trespassing sign, according to this account, the man Officer De La Cruz wouldn't arrest. And the reason he wouldn't arrest him was not because, oh, he's homeless, I'm not going to arrest him. It was because he wanted to give him a second option to use the shelter, apparently, if this story is accurate. He said, you wanted to use the shelter? He said, no, okay, we're arresting you. He wanted to say to the guy, okay, now do you still want to be arrested and you want to use the shelter? Instead, his superiors, apparently eager to be punitive and to treat the homeless like shit, which is a common failing of people in control-oriented paramilitary organizations, particularly those who are following orders, essentially said to De La Cruz, no, you got to arrest him. You can't offer him a second opportunity to go to a shelter. So it's interesting that he wasn't even making a general, I won't follow the law kind of approach. He was trying to use a reasonable approach, which returned to the first alternative offered by the police. Now, I could be wrong about this. This story could be inaccurate. But that's my commentary looking at this story. I'm not going to arrest him, he said. He's got a right to a shelter. Another officer processed the arrest, and the Officer De La Cruz was suspended. This is, again, a story from the New York Times of about a month ago. Norman Siegel, former executive director of the New York Civil Liberties Union and one of Officer De La Cruz's lawyers, insists the policy change had never been properly promulgated and the arrest had been manufactured to set up the officer. If that homeless person was a threat, why were they standing around waiting for De La Cruz to show up, Mr. Siegel asked. Officer De La Cruz said he was not opposed to arresting homeless criminals. His first arrest was a homeless man who jumped a turnstile, but he would arrest anyone who posed a danger of violence. But he said that someone just down on his luck was not a criminal. That was why he thought his unit's original mission of helping the homeless find services was a noble cause. My position in life is to treat people like I want to be treated, he said. That's what Jesus taught. That's what I instill in my children. Officer De La Cruz now says that if faced with the same situation, he would comply with whatever I was told to do. He did not see it as betraying his ideals, but as a way of sparing his family more suffering. His faith, he insists, remains. He knows some people find it odd that he feels this way. He said some of his colleagues joked about how he read the Bible during breaks. They always look at you, check you out, he said. They always want to know what makes you tick. You're a mystery to them when people don't live by faith. And that's a story in the New York Times by David Gonzalez, June 26, 2004, cop suspended for refusing to hassle homeless. You know, it's often the case I found that some of the most steadfast allies in the struggle to restore or retain or regain rights for homeless people are people who are religiously oriented, whether they're fundamentalist Christians or progressive Quakers or just people with strong religious views. They have a sense of compassion, which is very real. And so I don't agree with faith-based initiative stuff from the Bush administration, but I have to take off my hat and acknowledge the accomplishments and the courage of people like Wiley Drake, who's the reverend of Buena Park First Baptist Church down in Southern California in a Los Angeles suburb. He's been on the air here before. He's actually going to be on the air again, I hope, if I can get him on Sunday, because there's actually some more nonsense going on down there. I'll read from that now, an email I got from him. Here's a story. Pastor vows city won't stop church's homeless ministry by Allie Martin, dated July 27th, Agape Press. A California pastor says he will keep opening his church doors to the homeless despite increasing scrutiny from city officials. On any given night, 70 or 80 homeless people are allowed to sleep in the First Southern Baptist at Buena Park. Actually, I think it used to be 210. That's what he told me. But recently, Pastor Wiley Drake says city officials have notified him they are reviewing his occupancy and land use permits and other paperwork. Drake says city officials are upset because his church is not far from Anaheim, California, and Disneyland, which is often touted in advertisements as the happiest place on earth. He believes Buena Park officials are quite unhappy with having a ministry to the homeless in such close proximity to the amusement park and resort area, that they are employing intimidation and harassment to try to stop the church from doing its outreach to this needy community in that location. But the pastor of the First Southern Baptist Church notes he has fought off previous efforts by city officials to evict the homeless from his church, and he says that those who have a need will continue to receive help. We just will not turn anyone away, Drake said. If people are homeless, people are poor, and they have a sincere desire to be helped, we find a way to help them, and the city doesn't like that because we're in an entertainment zone. Still, the pastor says his church will go on housing homeless people despite the city officials' inquiries. The pastor insists his church will continue to do as Jesus said, inasmuch as you've done it unto the one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. Drake adds that Buena Park officials have been coming up against us in every way they can, but to God be the glory, his will and his way will prevail. And Drake's press release says, July 28th, city refuses to release minutes of meeting held in Pastor Drake's absence. Boy, it sounds like the Santa Cruz City Council. July 28th, 2004, the Planning Commission of Buena Park discussed how to take legal action against the pastor and church, but upon the pastor's return, they refused to allow him a copy of the minutes. One commissioner indicated that maybe they should take a bolt cutter to the locks of the church. Another indicated they wanted a list of all the people at the church. Still another indicated that maybe the city needed to go to a judge and have the pastor cited for contempt of court. Pastor Drake says it seems the city is dead set on taking him to jail again because he refuses to kick the great unwashed homeless out of the Lord's church. Pastor Drake also indicated in a year's time, more than 300 pray to receive Christ as their Lord and Savior, so we must be doing something right. Please pray for the church and Pastor Wiley Drake. Drake has actually been convicted of housing the homeless under violating zoning laws. He was convicted of three misdemeanors, and the judge refused to sentence him to anything, saying we wouldn't even give him community service because he'd already done community service by housing the homeless. So In some cases, the judges are not entirely in the pockets of the city councils, the board of supervisors, and the police department. But apparently, I wouldn't venture to say that this county is one of them, unfortunately, since police regularly uphold in a knee-jerk fashion anti-homeless laws that clearly have no meaningful public health or safety connection other than pandering to the prejudices of certain merchants and the fears of certain residents. What do you think? Hey, got a phone line here if you're interested, 427-3772. And while I'm waiting for that flood of calls, let's hear a little more of this.
By surprise.
life is all in how you find it.
Valerie Christie, another song from one of the Safe performers. You can be safe and not sorry by coming down on Wednesday night, 6 to 9. Bring your guitar, bring your kazoo, or just bring yourself. Also, if you're a political tabler, whether it's you're tabling for Buchanan, Kerry, Bush, or Satan herself, you can come on down there and reclaim public space in the downtown area. This is, again, an important public service that we need to do. I know, I understand that there's going to be a People's Night Out coming up, thanks to some organizing work. I'm not quite sure what evening it is. I think it's next Tuesday evening, if I'm not mistaken, but not positive about that. Maybe people have got some details on that if they want to call in, if anybody has information about the People's Night Out. I actually just got an email about a program coming over community television, Voices from the Village, for those who are, well, who've got community TV. I'm not terribly clear what this show is about, but I'm going to read you the press release for those of you who want to check it out. It's Channel 27, goes for an hour, 7:30 to 8:30, Religion, Politics, and Social Control. It's a live show with a call-in number at 425-8844. Maybe if you call them, you can find out what's cooking. Religion, Politics, and Social Control. Guests, Mo Marino, Art Durand, a.k.a. Nanalk, and Greg Mahan, with the host, former Citizens Police Review Board chair, Mark Halfmoon. An article they say this food for thought that presumably the show is going to be about the covert kingdom, thy will be done on earth as it is in Texas. Sounds like an attack on our Führer. Not long ago, I pulled my car up, this is a bit of the article, alongside a tiny wooden church in the woods, a stark white frame box my family built in 1840, and as always, an honest-to-God chill went through me for the ancestral ghosts presumably hovering over the graves there. From the wide-open front door, the Pentecostal preacher's message echoed from within the plain wooden walls, "Thank you, God, for giving us strong leaders like President Bush during this crisis. Praise you, Lord, and guide him in this battle with Satan's Muslim armies." If I had chosen to go back down the road a mile or two to the sprawling New Bible Baptist Church, complete with school facilities, professional sound system, and in-house television production, I could have heard approximately the same exhortation usually offered at the end of the prayer for sons and daughters of members in the congregation serving in Iraq, and could be heard in any of the thousands upon thousands of praise temples across our republic. After a lifetime of identity conflict, I've come to accept that blood-wise, if not politically or spiritually, these are my people. And as a leftist, it is very clear to me these days why urban liberals not only fail to understand these people, but do not even know they exist, other than as some general lump of ignorant, intolerant voters called the religious right or the Christian right or neocon Christians. But until progressives come to understand what these people read, hear, are told, and deeply believe, we cannot understand American politics, much less be effective. So apparently this show is about a human understanding of people who believe in fundamentalist Christian beliefs and also translate these into the political arena. I actually bought a book about this subject today, too, called What's Wrong with Kansas, which I'm going to be reading and looking at coincidentally. So it's interesting that great minds are thinking in the same channels. So check that out if you're interested. 7:30 to 8:30 today on Community Television Channel 27. I guess if you haven't got a TV, you might wander over to the Community Television Station, which is on Pacific Avenue right across from Zachary's. Block beyond the Catalyst as you head toward the boardwalk on the other side of the street. What is it, 816 or 1016? I don't know the actual address of the place, but it's up in that direction. You may be able to get in there. Who knows? So you can check that out. Let's see here. So that's going on tonight for those who are interested. And I'm not, frankly, although I'm kind of interested in the subject. What I've got for you here for the next half hour, I'm going to kind of be rushing through a few things. On the streets, as you've heard, SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, has been continuing to do its Wednesday night shindigs. And I'm glad, really. I really enjoy those things, in spite of the fact that I'm not a big singer myself and my performances amount to occasional sallies as X or Y Swami Y. Perhaps you've heard Y Swami Y occasionally comes on the air, but not for a long time. And also, I guess you might consider cop watching in a very extroverted fashion, as I often do when I see police harassing homeless people, and I try to draw the community's attention to it. A form of performance art, in a way. In another sense, it's simply a form of free speech exercise. So I'm not really a street performer in the sense that guitarists and harpists and jugglers who earn their livelihood are on the streets of Santa Cruz. Still, the organization SAFE, which I've been working with, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, actually kind of began as a civil rights union-ish type effort, which came out of the group of musicians that came together to play at the Loudon Nelson Center. Gotten together through the organizing efforts of Tom Noddy last summer. It was called Only in Santa Cruz. It was a great show. And it was funded partially, I think, by Neil Coonerty, who, through his Santa Cruz, his T-shirt about, it's not Dare to be Weird, it's Keep Santa Cruz Weird T-shirt, Support Street Performers, which he's now been selling without the logo, Support Street Performers. And he's also, of course, supported the very laws that have been screwing over the street performers, though he kind of supported a slightly milder version of them. Anyway, this group, SAFE, evolved working on a set of trying to organize a set of principles and objectives and changes that, and also kind of also rules that street performers wanted to follow, though actually there was a previous set of rules that I think most street performers found just fine, the Voluntary Street Performers Guidelines, which essentially stated you play for an hour. If somebody complains, whether it's a resident, a merchant, another performer who wants the space, and they say, you know, gee, I'd like, you know, I can take it for another hour, but I'd like you to move after that. You agree to it not because there's anything wrong with your playing, not because you want to surrender your First Amendment rights, but mainly because you want to share the space and work out a sort of a neighborly approach to that. That has been perverted by council members Porter and Riley and the rest of the city council under Rutkin, Matthews, and Kennedy and the rest into the move-along law, which is a law that now says you can only play for an hour in any one place where you have a display device. Display devices can be such a small thing as a cap, which you're looking for funding in. It can be a political table on which you're trying to register voters or boycott the Pacific Trading Company, as we were last summer. It's a completely unconstitutional law. And Steve Argue and Matthew Hartog, two activists who were engaged in the latter, actually they were tabling in conjunction with a Huff table, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, in front of the Pacific Trading Company, pointing out the abuses of the PTC, which, as I said, is probably added again. Boycott the Pacific Trading Company, by the way, while I'm at it. They were hauled off to jail and charges dragged on for Steve Argue for 9-10 months. Tony Bowl defended him. The city council rapidly went into kind of a quick and dirty maneuver, eliminating a section of another law which removed a legal argument that Attorney Tony Bull had. But the judge kind of essentially said, well, we're going to throw this case out for the moment because of all the kind of shenanigans that have been going on. But he didn't indicate that he was going to find the law unconstitutional. So we really are at a difficult kind of crossroads, though people have been ignoring the law. I know I have. If the police, I can tell the police right now, if you ask me to move along, I probably won't, unless there's somebody else who really needs to use the space or some really legitimate reason. I'm not going to surrender my First Amendment rights. I mean, it may be if it's a Friday and I'm about to be taken to jail, I have to think about maybe that's the time whether I'm going to go to jail or not. But barring that, I'm encouraging people to just take a stand on this, because that, I think, is what stopped the police from doing it for the last year, is the realization that there were plenty of people getting pissed about this and some people who were going to jail over it and just didn't look too nice, plus the fact that the city might be somewhere down the road successfully sued, though that doesn't seem to be in the cards immediately at the moment. Anyway, what do street performers think about this? There's a poll which I've written up. I'm kind of circulating. Do you favor the voluntary street performers guidelines over the existing forbidden zone and move-along laws? I've already said what the move-along law is. The forbidden zone law, for those of you who don't know, is laws that say essentially you can't play with any display device, within 10 feet of a shop, within 10 feet of a fence that's like the fence in front of New Leaf Market, within 10 feet of a crosswalk, within 10 feet of a bench, within 10 feet of a telephone, as a whole. And essentially it rules out about 80% of the sidewalk for any kind of normal performance activity. And it has nothing to do with obstruction of traffic. It has nothing to do with safety. It simply has to do with giving the police a tool to harass performers whenever they want. Police will harass you whether you're inside the right zone or outside it, as I think people are beginning to find out. And they were doing so before by saying, oh, this is unreasonable noise, or you're disturbing the peace, simply because a merchant complained they didn't like the sound. And my advice to those who get this kind of complaint, although it's obviously has to vary with your circumstances, to tell the police officer, look, you got to listen to my music right now and think if you think it's disturbing the police. And he says, oh, no, it's just a citizen's complaint, you know. And then you say, well, if the citizen wants to come out and sign a complaint to either give me a ticket or get me arrested, then let that citizen come forward. Then they have to go to court to prove it. And I would like to, if that happens, I will sign a complaint immediately that the citizen is making a false police report, because this is not unreasonable noise, and it's not even a matter of opinion. It's a matter of merchants or some other people who have a prejudice trying to eliminate people from public spaces and use the police to do their dirty work. So that's something you can do. The trouble is, of course, if you're a performer, what you have to do is, your musical instrument might be taken as evidence. What we need to do possibly as SAFE is set up a fund to replace people's musical instruments if they're taken, so that if they stand up and just say no to this kind of shit from people like the Pacific Trading Company or Jackson's Shoes or, I don't know, whoever else, Officer CSO Pam Bechtel, who seems to make a life's career out of harassing people up and down the avenue and writing them tickets, bad tickets, in fact, tickets don't even reflect the actual law, then they have some recourse. So there actually was some seed money given to SAFE, and I'm encouraging people who are interested, who are street performers, or even people who are friends of street performers, to pass on the word and come to the next Wednesday SAFE performance, 6 to 9, and we can talk about this. Or alternately, give a call to, I guess the number to call is Joe Williams, who is one of the lead street performers, great guitarist, and also a Peace and Freedom Party candidate. You heard him speak earlier on the air. His number is 465-0447. And leave him a message that you'd like, if you're a street performer, that you'd like to hold a meeting to discuss if you have concerns about police harassment or other problems, or just ways of better organizing among street performers. And that's, of course, very hard. Street performers are a very individualistic lot. It's hard to come to any conclusions. And we got really tired of meetings. We met for half a year. We pounded out some basic principles. And then we got tired of meetings, so we said, let's just go out on the streets and take back some public space. And we did. And that's where we are now. Anyway, this poll has some other questions. Do you favor solidarity in restoring the rights of street performers to respectfully and reasonably use public spaces to perform for donation? Do you regard SAFE as a group which you consider yourself a member? And so forth. So if you're interested in that, check it out and give us a call. I should say give a call to Joe. And if you didn't get Joe's number, you can always call the Huff line. I'll pass on your message, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's a number that just goes to a voicemail, but I do respond to those messages. So think about that. And you can also call the studio. Talk about it, 427-3772. That's another number to call. And that's a possibility. Let's hear a little more from last night's SAFE event and interviews around it.
He's a man who has been facing some hostility and indeed some violence on the streets. What are we going to call you for the purposes of this interview?
Purple Paradise.
All right, PP. Now, PP, what happened?
I'm trying to find somewhere to take a pee. I can't find any bathrooms. No. Last night, what's the date?
Today's the 28th, Wednesday evening.
On last night, the 27th, I was jumped by five local Santa Cruz guys. Three of them had Santa Cruz High School t-shirts on. They jumped me. The only reason it appears to be because I'm like a guy with a guitar, a homeless guy, they think.
On Pacific Avenue?
Yeah, with a guitar.
What time was it?
About 1 a.m.
And did they say anything before they jumped you?
First they asked me for a cigarette. I didn't have one. I don't smoke. I don't smoke marijuana. But I said I don't smoke. And they said, oh, come on, dude. And then like, continued from there, but then I kind of got a little revolutionary and just started saying, why you guys mess with people on the street? That started it. They jumped me, man. They just, all five of them came at me, you know, and I grabbed one guy by the arm. I might have fucked up his wrist pretty good, but they realized I could fight back. And they went away. They ran away, kind of.
How old were these?
16, 17.
And where was this exactly?
By in front of Pacific Trading Company.
A fine business, wouldn't you agree?
That's almost like a regular thing. If you live on the street in Santa Cruz, I survive, you know, whatever. And I moved on.
First time that happened to you here?
That's about the 50th time, 100th time at least.
When's the last time it happened to you before this?
About a couple weeks ago.
Same group or a different group?
No, different group. It's kind of like a, what do they call it, almost like when something's like always happens? I don't know the word.
Repetitive, chronic?
Chronic. It's a chronic thing in Santa Cruz, but mainly Pacific Trading Company is starting to really piss me off, and they're not letting people play music in front of there anymore.
Tell me about that.
Today, Wednesday, I'm trying to express my American rights or constitutional rights.
Sing a song.
Constitutional rights to freedom of speech. Pacific Trading Company, I'd like to call for a whole citywide boycott of Pacific Trading Company because they seem to be not letting people have their constitutional rights, freedom of speech. You're not allowed to recite a poem. I was reciting poetry.
Can you give us an example of a poem you were reading?
Sorry.
Okay, he's thumbing through this well-worn book, finding an appropriate poem here.
Sorry, poem.
Take your time.
Oh, there we go. The poem I was reading that was not appreciated by Pacific Trading Company. There's an excerpt from it.
Right.
How dare I question your little town? I'm exercising my freedom of speech. Most of the guys you see walking around here talking to themselves and babbling a lot. A lot of their condition is caused not by schizophrenia, but lack of sleep, which you could blame on the city. But, they pulled out a bench today in front of Jackson Shoes, what elicited my current attitude.
But I heard that from CJ, the musician. That
this is the poem I was reading in front of Pacific Trading Company earlier today, and my freedom of speech rights were violated. I was threatened. I also read the poem at the farmer's market and was hastily cell phone people were calling cops on cell phones as I finished my poem. But Santa Cruz is broken down into a class structure. If you have long hair, you're automatically a loser in this town, a bum. But I've seen the slow descent of Santa Cruz from a once vibrant artistic community into a modern strip mall, almost nearly void of culture. But culture does exist, despite the roaming bands of thugs that try to wipe it out. I'm just here to remind you of a lost era in Santa Cruz. And the city bigwigs and corporate guys like Barry Swinson bought up the mall after the 89 earthquake and conspired together to destroy the old ambience. I'm here, one of the people here, trying to keep it going. And it will always be here. The artists, grifters, musicians, freaks will never stop. The big sport in Santa Cruz is intimidation. Crews of tough guys roam the mall and terrorize. Street performers harass, beat up people on the street. They are arrogant in a group, but don't say a word alone. Somewhat similar to the Nazis. These thugs have been doing this for years and years and years. Seems the parents of kids in Santa Cruz must be teaching their kids to harass homeless. They're the ultimate wimps. The only thing more pathetic than these junior Nazis is the women that love them. Millions of women loved Hitler, so I guess I can see the reason why maybe they love these guys. But Pacific Trading Company has no right to do what they do.
So what did the employee or unemployee of the Pacific Trading Company do when you read this poem?
What's strange is she's obviously saying, I can see her on the phone, and looking at me in a threatening way to call the police because this man is doing something illegal. But I know I'm not doing it morally wrong, but just as a kind of precaution, I kind of disappear. Every time she looked at me, I disappeared. And it's kind of like, I could never understand, the store's already closed. They can go home. They don't have to hear me anymore. I mean, it's nothing.
Happened today, recently. An hour ago.
Yeah, it wasn't an employee, like, when they're open, it's still wrong, but they're closed. Like their minds. That's all I can say. I don't want to.
Thank you. And we've been talking with PP.
Thank you.
Yes. We've had a boycott against the Pacific Trading Company for a year. Huff has, because of the fact that they took out public space by moving that fence railing, eliminating the fence. The planter seating area near the Pacific Trading Company. Simply get rid of musicians like Cosmic Chris and others. And it sounds like if you're accurate, what they're doing is something.
They moved the other one by Jackson Shoes.
And the bench has been taken out apparently.
Today.
I'm going to go check that out.
Oh yeah, as of today. Yeah. I was sitting on the ground, going,
what the fuck is this? We're in front of Borders, and it's about 8:30. We're talking with
Damien
and
Nicole.
And you two are dancing to invisible music, which only the two of you can hear.
Uh-huh.
And apparently, and that's the view of the local, what's your name?
Aubrey.
Aubrey's view.
They're both really cool. It's just that I think that they...
I'm cold.
They need some herbal medication.
Yeah, I'm already on herbal
medication. It's herbal, man. Now, you said you ran into a spitting bad situation.
Yeah, I just went to go hawk a loogie so I wouldn't be choking on it because I'm coughing up shit in my lungs. And they caught me on the... He goes, it's really disgusting to be honest. And then it's against the law. I'll give you a ticket.
Who said this? Which officer?
I don't know the officer. I've never seen him before. But he's skinny, tanned, short black hair. Sounds like a real ass, got a stick up his ass or something like that. And
when was this?
Last night.
What time of night?
Probably around 6-ish or something.
Where were you?
Right at the end of SoCal and Pacific. In the corner.
Any other questionable events happening down here?
Well, there's like cops scanning up on us.
When did that happen?
Same time.
And how many police were talking?
Like 4 or 5 of them. Like one parked down there, one parked up here, a couple on foot patrols.
What were they doing?
We don't know. They were just standing around us and just standing and just being really rude and watching us.
Did you do a little dancing, a little show for the police?
Everybody, we were just watching and we were trying to ask them what happened or anything.
But no tickets were issued?
No tickets, thank God.
No harassment?
Harassment, yes.
I mean, did they tell you to leave?
No, they were. They kept following, they kept watching, they kept staring at us where we left.
They always do that, though.
Yeah, but...
Do you, like, park
over? We give them a little hint.
Del Mar, and then...
When you stare at us long enough, we're going to leave. We don't trust you. Something's up.
He just doesn't trust his local police officer.
Nope,
I don't know.
Nope,
never do.
So I'm at the Pacific Trading Company, and I see a car blocking the road with flashing lights, a police car in front. And looks like Ananda Heinrich is emerging on the street with her mom and a police officer in front of the Pacific Trading Company, which is... Not sure if it's open or closed, but looks like a complaint may have been filed here. So I'm going to hang and see what the situation is, see how we're doing here.
But lamentably, or perhaps in a positive light, nothing particularly happened except the police officer continued to apparently talk with one of the co-owners of the Pacific Trading Company, Carolyn Heinrich. And I believe Carolyn's daughter was the... Ananda Heinrich was also there. But in any case, concerns are rising. I want to point out, announce at this point, that a group called the Human Rights Organization, which is concerned with eliminating the downtown ordinances and the sleeping ban and other anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz, will be having a meeting at 3:30 on Saturday at Loudoun Nelson Park, for anybody who's interested. They are planning protests in front of the Pacific Trading Company. I think that something like a panhandle inn is planned for those who are interested. So pick up your begging bowl and head over to the Human Rights Organization to join them 3:30 on Saturday if you want to be a part of that particular protest. Or hopefully I'll have some information about it when it's more concrete. I think they're planning it on Saturday. I don't think they're actually going to do it on Saturday, but they're planning it at Loudoun Nelson Park, or Laurel Park, as some call it. So check out that situation. If you want to be a part of it, but you can't get to the meeting, give a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'll pass on the word. I'm going to give a call now to folks who are at the Clearview Court agenda item at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting on Tuesday. They had the last meeting of the summer until early September, and at that meeting they sold out the Clearview Court residence. That's the last trailer park that did have rent control. But thanks to the Kennedy-Rotkin maneuvers, backed by the entire city council, they no longer have rent control. And I'm going to try to get a statement on that from someone who was there. See if I can actually get through to that person. Let's see if that person is around. Let's see how we're doing here. I'll try ringing them, see if we can get through. You never can tell what's going to happen here. A lot of the folks are very outspoken, but somewhat shy in talking to radio audiences, so that can happen.
Hello?
Is this Francis, the notorious city council watcher?
Yes.
And Francis, you're on free radio, and I know you spent many hours at the Santa Cruz City Council I guess it was Tuesday night?
Yes.
And... you've been following the Clearview Court and the De Anza Court rent control beheading, as I might call it, pretty closely, right?
Pretty much so.
Because, I mean, you are, of course, a resident of De Anza.
Mm-hmm.
And I know De Anza at one time was organizing against this, and then suddenly that organization kind of evaporated. And Clearview Court you gave some power and some strength to Clearview Court to negotiate. The De Anza got screwed last, I guess, September, October, and here it is July, and it took till July to put the final nails in the coffin of Clearview Court. Am I accurate? Were the nails put in the coffin on Tuesday night?
Yes.
How? You want to tell me a little bit about how that happened? I mean, was there any dissent? I know De Anza praised Councilmember Ed Porter for sort of sticking up, and at one point even voting against settlement that would, essentially destroy rent control at De Anza Mobile Home Park. Did any council members say nay on this occasion with Clearview Court?
No. Not at this point, no.
Mm-hmm. Was there much discussion? I mean, did you find anything of interest in the discussion at City Council?
There was very, very little discussion. This was, it was pretty much already packaged. They had it all packaged up and read it, and the attorney did and explained it, the dialogue, et cetera, and what was going on. So it was pretty much over, and it was just hearing how it was and then saying, okay, this sounds like a yay, okay, that type of thing.
Now, I understand the residents were not terribly happy with this proposal, and I talked to Liberty Lee, a tenant of Clearview Court, and I also saw, I guess, the statement, although I didn't really read it as carefully as I could have, of Anita Webb, the vice president of their association, who, when I whispered to her, I was sharply rebuked by Mayor Kennedy and told to take my conversation outside. And so we didn't, you know, I mean, I of course, ignored him and continued to try to, you know, converse in an inaudible tone, at least as far as anybody else went. But there were a number of changes that I think the Clearview Court people wanted. Did they make those changes known that they wanted at the mic in the public comment period?
Yes, they did. Dwight Herr and Anita both spoke on that.
Dwight is the lawyer who was kind of covering their case?
Yes.
What, do you recall any of the changes that they were looking for?
Oh, they were talking about, worried about the arbitration. They wanted arbitration to not be arbitration, but to be able to go to court.
Go a jury trial.
A jury trial. And that was a big concern. And someone got up and spoke about that in great detail.
That's if the landlord tries to screw them over in the lease, so they don't have to go to arbitration, but they can actually take the matter to a jury.
Right.
Now, I understand Tim Fitzmaurice, a council member and Green Party-endorsed guy, had some stirring words to say about that.
Oh, he did. He, at the very end, when they were all done and took their vote and everything, and they went around who wants to speak, and when he did, he really, he really spoke.
Did he do an Emily Riley?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I think he really kind of took her. I forgot the word I wanted, but
he stole her thunder.
Yeah, he stole her thunder. I was waiting for him to do the. I've been crying and haven't slept for nights, although he didn't do that, but he may as well have because he did the rest of it.
They said when De Anza was being screwed, they said that it really hurt them deeply to have to screw you guys all over.
Right. Well, that was pretty much what he was doing, but in this one, he he compared himself to their dilemma in that he had been a renter for 40 years, so it was not a new situation to him. I don't know, being a renter and being owning a mobile home and being a renter for the land, I'm not sure if that's the same as renting an apartment or a duplex, but I haven't really looked into that. But anyway.
In California, your rights are much greater if you own a mobile home. At least they can be if local jurisdictions give you some protection. For example, you can actually have rent control that doesn't involve vacancy decontrol, so that you can keep the same rent-controlled space.
Mm-hmm.
That's what City Council set up like 10 years ago for both De Anza and Clearview,
right.
And which they destroyed with a snap of the fingers in September of last year for De Anza, and now they did the final thing here as well for
mm-hmm.
Clearview, all while claiming, of course, to be doing this as a public benefit, right?
Right. Well, he went on to say that so he understood the situation, and he was in subsidized housing half the time, so it's not as if he weren't facing the difficulties that he thinks they're facing, including arbitration and those things. Then he went into arbitration and explained that people don't really understand what arbitration is, and that you get arbitration all the time. If you rent a car, you sign an agreement that's arbitration, and credit card, you're locked into an arbitration, and many, many other things like that, and you're probably not aware of it when it's happening.
So you're kind of getting screwed everywhere, so so why not get screwed here,
and
too?
And he said that he is the grievance officer for his union, and when they came up with arbitration, he was pretty upset about that, but then he
learned to live with it.
He understood it, and so he does it and thinks that this has been a perfect situation for the members of the council, and I would rather be in a different situation where we're able to guarantee people low rents for 33 years. We're not really doing that in some regards, but in some regards we are protecting people. I don't remember as a renter ever having a 34-year lease. That's never happened for me. I've been subjected to some amazing rent increases over my period of tenancies. I thought this was pretty interesting that in all this going on, he brings himself up that now, so you can be sorry for me, you know, taking away from what was going on to Clearview, and we're going to look at him and start feeling sorry for him. So I got a few tears in my eyes there and sniffled with my Kleenex tissue over what he had gone through.
Did you offer to give poor Tim a hug?
I didn't have an opportunity to, but
Emily Riley was willing to kind of pat him on the back.
Right. So I just thought it was kind of weird that here what these people had gone through, and they were just all in the dilemma and wringing their hands and whatever and had no more choices left than that. But he is telling them of his problems. And so, you know, don't feel bad, because I've been there too. But they're not sitting up there in city council.
Nor is he sitting in Clearview Court with his trailer about to be essentially,
exactly,
has his equity gutted to zero, so he can't sell it.
Yeah, that's exactly what that. And they're not probably most of them. I couldn't say because I don't know. But drawing the salaries that he's drawing, two of them, one there and one from the university. And so anyway, I think it's kind of hard to make that comparison. I don't know. It just didn't seem right to me that worked. So, and I don't think that he made anybody feel any better that they could say, well, you know, Tim Fitzmaurice has been in the same position that we're in. He also said something else that I took a little issue with. He said that they had spent considerable hours, probably more hours, on this topic than almost any topic that they've ever considered. And that's to protect and to their best to try to protect a segment of our community that's by comparison to 56,000 other members of our community, a rather small segment that we've spent weeks on in this particular topic. And I'm just speaking for myself personally, but I don't care if it's two people. It doesn't make any difference. I don't think we count heads or bodies.
Well, you know, also
it's, issue at hand, and I think that that's a pretty
he's playing them off against another group of people, but the point here is, when you destroy rent control for De Anza and Clearview, you also make it less likely that there'll be rent control considered for the city as a whole, I believe.
You betcha, and the county too.
And when you destroy rent control, you know, in those circumstances, you put an upward, you know, pressure on rents elsewhere. So Santa Cruz now has kind of a dubious distinction of being. I mean, there's rent-controlled trailer parks all around Santa Cruz, but Santa Cruz itself is a developer-happy zone. You know, they can whip in with their bed and breakfasts and their five-story parking lots and their huge conference hotel developments, you know, to just you know, roll on. You know, the Kennedy redevelopment approach, the Kennedy-Rotkin redevelopment agenda moves forward. Or
exactly.
Am I being too cynical here?
I don't think so. I think that's where it's at.
Well, you know, Francis, I'm going to try to get Liberty Lee and others on the phone on Sunday when we come back, where our show is kind of rolling to an end. I appreciate your being on. I know that we're kind of catching you at a difficult time and, you know, in the evening, and public speaking on the radio isn't your favorite pastime. So thank you for coming on and giving us anything you want to conclude with.
No, I think that's about it. That's where it was at.
Hey, and thank you for being there for the tenants, and I'll probably talk to you again before Sunday to get some more updates on this, if we can find
them.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right, Robert. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And indeed, we are reaching the end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Uncle Dennis from the Cream of the Dregs will be coming in shortly with a fine music show. Just a kind of a look ahead. On Sunday, I will be coming back with more on Clearview Court, probably some interviews with people from Clearview. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee went back to the City Council trying to get some protections against the Patriot Act, and they were told to take a hike in the nicest possible terms, and we're going to talk about that too. Of course, the Iraq situation, the convention deal, the SEIU and AFSCME, two large unions, have come out against the war in Iraq. Apparently that's more than people like Dennis Kucinich and even Michael Moore can do in their fever to anybody but Bush campaign. They're jettisoning all ideas of any kind of, you know, let's get out of Iraq as a primary priority. An interesting criticism appeared of Fahrenheit 9/11 on the Counterpunch website, which pointed out that the movie has absolutely no pictures whatsoever of any protesters against the war in Iraq. I don't remember any either, and that's what he claims, this reviewer. And one of the reasons he speculates that there is no protest, because there were sort of some of the hugest protests in the world that ever happened against the war in Iraq. You may remember February 2003, we had 3,000 to 7,000 people marching in the streets. And only one got a jaywalking ticket, me. Can you believe it? But that's another story. Anyway, if you get this whole not putting any protest into the film leaves the impression that what you have to do is just get rid of Bush. That all you've got to do is join the Democratic Party and, you know, you can do something else instead. That the main objective is simply to get rid of the figurehead Führer. But in fact, of course, we need to change the policy. And that's going to be done by people organizing at a grassroots level and doing it probably in hundreds of thousands on the streets. I don't see any other way to do it right now. Idea that you're going to somehow do it by electing a person who wants to send 25,000 more troops to Iraq, who wants to add two new army divisions, who believes that we should stay there for at least 4 more years in order to stabilize the government until that happens. At the same time, when we can't admit that this is an immense and vast failure, and not just because of how the war is being handled, this is the kind of person who you've got to devote your energies to getting the war over. You just have to do that. If that's your main priority, if your main priority is, Democratic Party politics, well, then, you know, jump on board. So anyway, that's it for tonight for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to go out some more music by Peter, Paul, and Mary. Give a call to 423-HUFF in the next few days if you've got stuff you want to put on Sunday's show. And I will. Hope to see you then.
Was it Caesar Chavez or Rosa Parks that day? Some say Dr. King or Gandhi that set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see that if you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. 'Cause singing and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Hey, you law-abiding citizens, come listen to this song. Laws are made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote while the children wrote the mine, yeah.
The more you study history, the less you can deny it.
Say a rotten law stays on the books, still folks with guts defy it.
Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand, 'cause singing and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Well, the law's supposed to serve us, so are the police. But when the system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace.
We must be ever vigilant for justice to prevail.
So get courage from your convictions, let them haul you up to jail.
Have you been to jail for justice? Want to shake your hand? 'Cause singing and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine. Have you been to jail for justice?
Have you been to jail for justice?
Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
in a smoky haze. Sunday morning.
slip into unconsciousness. I like to have another kiss, another flashing chance at bliss, another kiss, another kiss. The days are bright and filled with pain. Enclose me in your gentle rain. The time you ran was too insane. We'll meet again. We'll meet again.
She does as she pleases. She listens for